So we created a list. I didn't show you how to edit a list, so we'll quickly jump over. So here's the list we created. And just a little navigation. So if I care about items, I click on the items, and that'll be the ribbon we'll come up for. Items, these are things you can do with an item. And I can select an item. It's very much like notes. I can select it and then do something with it. But we're going to go to the list, and we'll go over the list settings. And if we scroll down here, here's our columns. And I can create a new column. So that's essentially adding another item in the notes term, to be another item to the document, which is nice. You know, I can just go ahead and add them. It's not like a relational data store where I have to define it first, and I'm sort of locked in. So, you know, if I say create item, and I can do, for example, if I do a create column, I get the option of doing things which is very notes-like. Single line of text, multiple line, choices, you know, and those choices can be either hard-coded or do like a DB lookup, show my choices from another list. It can be a currency, date, time. Here's a lookup. You know, I can look up somewhere else, a checkbox. But what's interesting here, here's a hyperlink, is the calculated. So I can say, give me a calculated one. So that one can be this times that or whatever expression you can come up with. Here's external data. So I can have just one column that's pulling from from external data source like DB2 or something. So there's lots of options in editing. And remember, there's no UI here. I'm just editing the definition of the data store. And now the view, we did edit the view. And that was when, and no, by the way, notice these are called breadcrumbs. So right now I'm in the list settings. I can click on the name of the list. Or I can click on the home, back up to the home page, so it builds down, you can just, which is nice for navigation. Now the one we created, the default view is the data grid view, but I want to show it to you. So I click on the list and I say standard view. And that gives me the presence controls. I don't see the grid view, but the grid view also lets me edit data anywhere in the grid. I can just go ahead and type things. And I can modify the view. I can also create a view. I have to give you one warning, one bad terminology. Maybe it's different. Maybe it's just the English. Just like in notes, I can have multiple forms, right? I can have one set of data, and I can have 10 different forms looking at it. So if I'm a manager, I see data differently. I have different permissions, read, write. If I'm a submitter, I see different data, and so on. So you might have hide whens, or you might have different forms. I can create multiple forms, just like in notes, and one can be the default. Right now I'm going to the default form, but I can have more, and right here is the, what's the view? And the point is, though, if I create those other forms in the documentation, it refers to those other forms as views. Yeah, isn't that stupid? So yes, this is a view, but alternate forms for editing it are also called views. So when you're reading your documentation, if you hear that, just be like, okay, which view are they talking about, a real view or alternate forms? So that drove me a bit crazy when I came across that. I couldn't imagine it, you know, why they did that. It's just a legacy thing where they first called them views. Usually the way I handle that is with forms. So the form itself can be read, write, or hide fields, you know, based on who you are. So there is an event when you go to open this in edit mode. It fires an event, and in there you put a rule that says if, you know, no code, a rule that says if you are a manager, or if you are this, or whatever it is, or the status of this one is, you know, requested or canceled or whatever, to use a different form. That form has different read writes and different fields showing up. So that's generally how you do that. I know in notes you can have each and every field like a reader-author kind of thing. It's not quite as granular as Notes, as far as securing each and every field. It's item level. So, no, that's a good question. Hey. Well, you don't worry about traffic. If you have a motorcycle, I don't worry about the traffic. You just go right down the middle. So the edit the, you know, so modify view. You saw this modify view. You can also create a view. So it says current view right now. This would be so modify in SharePoint Designer. That's where I can do advanced things. Semi-advanced, not advanced. So very similar. I said modify the view. You saw me do that before, where it just comes in, and I can create a new one too. But here's the name of it, and here's the URL, part of the URL. Here I can turn on the columns, turn off the columns. I mentioned before I can do things like sorting, default sorting, numeric or alpha sorting, filtering, and in Lotus Notes, what you might do is build many different views where it's like these are the values for a country. And these are another view for the other country and the other country. I don't necessarily have to do that in SharePoint because they can do that themselves. If we go back to the view. Yeah, this mouse is not. Well, right now, if I want to only see the ones from Boston, for example, I have that. I didn't have to build another view. Where in Notes, you typically would build a view for each location. I launched the form before and showed you how you could edit the form, into InfoPath, so we don't have to do that. Now, workflows. Workflows is a great topic. Lotus Notes does not have workflow. People always have a heart attack. It's famous for workflow. All your Lotus Notes applications are workflow. Yes. It's kind of like saying a junkyard does not have cars. It's got pieces, parts, but no cars. You can go there and build a car. And that's what Lotus Notes is like. You can build a workflow. It's kind of good and bad. So if I'm going to build a workflow in Lotus Notes, what it has is triggers and events. Document is saved. Someone exits a field. Post save. All these events fire. And then you have to code it or use an app formula that says, when this happens, I want to create an email. And I want to send it to this person, and I want them to include the doc link to this document. And so you get an email when someone does something and it says you need to approve this, and you click on that link, and then there's a form, and the form has a button that says approve, which sets a value inside of the form to the thing, which fires another thing off. There's values, and now it shows up another view. The point being, you have to build it yourself. So back when Lotus was first popular doing workflows, there was nothing else that did workflows. It was just, and you could very quickly do it. The bad news, and you'll agree with me this, I think, someone brings you a database and says, we have this workflow and we don't know what it does. Tell me. It's awful because there's 20 ways of doing everything. And you have to look and do a trace in the Lotus script, but then the formulas don't trace. And then you have to look and poke around and try and figure out what it does. It's very difficult to look at it because there's many ways of doing it. So SharePoint has a concept of a workflow. Just like you can create an agent, you say create new agent, create new workflow. The workflow in SharePoint Designer has no code. It's all point and click, drag and drop. We'll poke around in a minute. events fired. When do you want it to fire? Very similar to, how you'd achieve the same thing in Lotus Notes by hand. This is built in. Now, I kept saying that the children end users have blunt scissors. They can't hurt themselves. Workflows in SharePoint Designer, again, can't write an infinite loop. You can't write a loop. You can do some tricks to make it pretend a loop. But the point is, by default, someone can't just go in there and point back up to here and do that. So it makes it harder for children to hurt themselves. But let's talk about the types of workflow in SharePoint Designer. These are the configuration ones, no code. And in 2010, we have three kinds of workflows. The default from 2007 It's called a list workflow. And all that means in notes terms is you want to get the current database context. So it knows the name of your fields. So current database context, username. What's the current user of the database? If I create a workflow based on a list, it knows the name of all the fields. So I can just say, you know, if value equals, and it gives me a list of all the ones in the list. It's bound to that list. Just like that agent, always bound to that database. You can't just rip that agent out. You can copy it and stick it in another database, and then you have to make sure the names match. So it was totally configured to work with just that one list. And the problem with that was, great, this workflow does exactly what I want. I want to do it again over here. I got to start all over again. I got to go in and click and run the wizards and do the things exactly again. So I couldn't reuse it. So in 2010, they came out with reusable workflows, where ones you can define that you say, I expect a value of first name, I expect a value of end date, I expect a value of this, but I'm not going to tell you what list I'm going to use this with until later. And when I'm done, I save it, and then someone can actually say, oh, that workflow, I'm going to plug it into this list, and I sure hope it has a first name and an end date and those kind of things. But if I have like a standard list, like contacts or something, I know those fields are there. So I have to know that. But it doesn't mean I can use it over and over again. I still have the same problem again if they don't map up. But that's because of a reusable one. I define it, and I don't get the nice little prompt that says, here's all the fields you have. I actually have to, it's kind of like late binding. I have to just know the field names. And then the last new one is a site workflow, which means it's like an agent that runs the database. It has nothing to do with the data. Runs at the database level. So it doesn't necessarily have to look at a document. It just runs on usually from a menu. You go to a menu and say, run this agent, run this workflow. I don't have to go into a list. I don't have to trigger an event there. It's actually, you know, list level. And there's out of the box. There's like six workflows that come with it. And I can just use those. Those are reusable. They're assigned. I can assign them. And there's like document approval, collect signatures. I don't remember all the ones. But I can assign those from a browser. I can go into a browser and say, this list needs this workflow. Go. So that's really nice. So the theory was there's a handful of really, really common workflows. Let's Microsoft build them for you, and then you can just use them. But I'm hoping you're getting the picture that, gee, if I can do that, you know, why do I need a developer? And I'm trying to say, yep, we're moving the needle over towards the end user. Let them do stuff themselves. Now, it's true, it's power user, that a lot of people won't do this, but a lot of people will. So this is a screenshot of a workflow, but let's go ahead and create a workflow. Maybe we'll edit one. I want to go to... Here's a list I created that has a workflow. So maybe we'll work backwards. So what you're looking at now is that, and it's too bad this is a long name, it wraps, but this is actually a form, and here's the data that's been promoted from the form to show up. Boy, this mouse is not working. And so all this information, for example, this expense code, was only entered once inside this form. Way over here, this column, look, this is the workflow. And that has a hot link. If I click on it, we'll work backwards. And that is the status of this workflow. This step is done, this step is done, this step is done. It's waiting for this loser to do his piece. So I, as a submitter, can just go in there and see graphically in the browser what's happening with my workflow. This is a free for free thing. I didn't have to, as a developer, go and build this graphically. The graphics were built for me. And so it's very handy. Someone can actually see. And also, if there's statistics about the workflow, you know, when time and date that each step happened. So there's a whole audit logging of what's happening in that workflow, which is great because they don't call you and go, the workflow is not working. You know, you can just click in here and go, oh, well, this loser here is not doing his job. Let's call him, kind of thing. So that's nice. So here's the concept of a workflow design element has this feature. There's actually a checkbox you have to check that say enable this, but that's nice. So I can check on the status of my workflow. I'm going to open up one of these documents. And there's our InfoPath form. And remember I said that, was it total? Total, this number here is showing up as one of those columns, which means I can do a workflow based on that. And the interesting part, maybe we'll create a new workflow. Yeah. Workflow settings. See, I can add a workflow. I'm in a browser. And that would mean add one from already published, from a list of those. Create a workflow in SharePoint Designer. Create a reusable workflow in SharePoint Designer. Let's just take a look at the settings. So here's the only one there is this one called Expense Claims that I created. And look, there's four of them in process. So there's four of them running. I'm going to click on this hyperlink. Okay, I thought it would let me. I thought it would launch it for me, but it didn't. Well, it's okay. So I opened up SharePoint Designer, and a lot like Lotus Notes, I have to tell it what site I want to work with. And right now, it's reading down the information about that site. Because everything does live on the server. And Lotus Notes, by default, everything lives on the client. So even if you open up a database on a server, it all comes down to the client, and you work on it. And in the SharePoint world, it's all on the server. Okay, here's the site. I'm going to go to Workflows. And it's going to show me a bunch. Now, notice the ones at the top here. Globally reusable. These are the out-of-the-box ones. And if I come down to the expense claim workflow, I'm going to get all kinds of metadata about that workflow. Now, it's true this site is in Redmond, but it should be pretty quick. Okay, so here's all this information. And you can do things like assign people's tasks. That's very common. I want to walk through some things here. Allow workflow to be manually started. That's essentially added to the menu from notes. Start workflow automatically when an item is created. That's start a workflow when an item is changed. So these are very, very notesy, workflowy things. Here's the forms. And by the way, my workflow can have an initialization form. So you say start this workflow, it might ask you for some parameters. You know, like, when do you want this due date or whatever. So as a developer, I can present them with a dialogue that says, hey, here's the things I want to collect from you before I start my workflow, which is very handy. So I don't have to include it in hidden fields and things. I can actually ask it. Yes? Well, in this case, InfoPath is actually the form, and the form that prompted me came in InfoPath form. So I can edit that. I can create that dialogue that says, hey, Gary, you know, your workflow is starting. What do you want? What's your expense record? Whatever it is. I can build that in InfoPath, which means no code. Again, I'm trying to get those power users to be able to do everything. So let's edit the workflow. And this is on InfoPath form library we're using. And Heinz has seen this one. So, very exciting. There's a workflow. Now, it looks a bit like a simple action agent in Notes. We actually, and you can add multiple agents, and they look like this. You answer the questions. So what I'm going to skip right down to the end here, and I'm going to click here, and I'm going to say I can add a condition or an action or a step. I'm going to add an action and send an email. Seems good enough. Now, notice it's blue. So then this, and I click on the blue part. Essentially, blue means I have to answer a question. It's not complete. I click on there, and this looks a lot like Notes, the simple agent that sends an email. But what's way cool is I click on the little directory thing and I want to see, I want to see a workflow lookup. Oh, so I can look at the current item. So think of the document, I'm looking for a field in there, or workflow context, like an agent context. And when I do that, look, here's all the things that this workflow knows about. One thing it knows all about is the current user. And I want to return that actually as an email address. So if I say OK, it now is a variable. It says whoever is running this workflow, so I'm submitting a new expense report, it's going to email me telling me I successfully submitted it. In the subject, I can do things like current item, URL path, I think. I don't want to put it in the subject. In the subject, I might put like, I don't know, total. So that's going to be the total. Now, I could put text around that. I could say, you know, for your expense report of amount, blah. And the same thing in here. I can add, you know, text, add a lookup, and let's say, I'll look up prover comments. Expense code. Now, notice this expression, I could have typed that. That little wizard just helped me kind of go through it. And I think what will happen is eventually you just type them yourself. You won't be doing that. But it's a lot like an ad formula in the notes world. So I can stick all that information in there, you know, the data was submitted and your name and that kind of stuff. And then if I say OK, which I'll do that, this is now black. It turned from blue to black. It says, I'm good. I'm ready to go. When you get to this step, I know exactly what to do. There's nothing needed. So all of these other things, the same thing happened. They all came in as blank. And I had to click on it and answer the questions. So when it says send an email, it's like to who? And I give it a formula. And when it says check if the current item form status equals submitted. So I'm just saying look at the current item. And if there's a status field, it's equal submitted. And this is all done point and click. Where you might do this in LotusScript or an app formula in notes. Where here I'm just doing it with point and clicks. So when I finish building all of this, by the way, take that back out again. I just hit publish. That's it. Now this one is married to the list. So I hit publish, it knows where to publish it. And that's why those fields popped up. And this is your basic workflow. And then you saw that you just drag your things down, conditions and activities. And now we'll talk about something really cool. So this is where I've showed you, and the blue parts needed to be answered yet. This is Visio. So this answers the question I get constantly is, I have 1,000 workflows in Notes. Okay, 1,010. I have all kinds of them. Where's the tool that migrates those? I want to push a button and have it convert those over to SharePoint. And the answer is, well, there is no tool because there's 20 ways of doing every single step in Notes. So to figure all those out, very complicated. And also, I would say, why do you want to have the same app you started with? Time and money and end up with the same thing, you want something better. That's my goal. I'm going to spend time and money. I want to have something that has some advantages. And we talked about the fact that by putting something into SharePoint, it's searchable and backup and restore and those kind of things. Well, also, if I do a workflow, I could have just done what I did there and exported it. It said, export this as a VWI file and imported it into Visio. Or I could have gone to Visio, and I could have used a template and dragged all these workflow activities on there. So the first diamond, remember Computer Science 101, you know, diamond if greater than 10,000 this way, no, go this way. So I can give that to the end user and say, hey, we got a budget, and your workflow and notes, we're going to improve it. So here you go. Draw me the workflow you'd like to see. Now, if you're king of the world, you can draw the workflow any way you want. And they come in here and they draw their workflow. Of course, if there's a loop, we're in trouble. They say, I want to go back to the beginning. We have to do some challenges there. But in theory, they draw this, they export it as a VWI file. I import it into SharePoint Designer, and this is what I see. And then I click on every blue thing and I answer the questions. I put in formulas or whatever it takes to answer those questions. I then hit publish, and then it's in SharePoint, and then I get the graphical, you know, I showed you the graphical status and all those nice things. And then always what happens is the end user says, you know, I forgot a whole step. I say, great. Let me take this one where I've added value and send it back to you for you to edit and add to it. And all the questions I've answered are still stored in this file. You just don't see them here. They add information. They send it back to me. And if you do that a few times, the end user is usually pretty happy because they're like, gee, it's my workflow. I designed it. So I will say, though, it's a bit limited on what you can do in the workflow. But I still think that most business people have easy workflows. They think they have hard ones, but they're just this or this or this. They don't call you unless they're hard. That's the problem. People say all the ones I see are hard. So that's sort of a very quick view of workflows. Very quick. I didn't show you in there. I'm back up, I guess. Is what if I want to do something more complicated than this? Something I can't do in here. I can still create it here, send it here, answer the questions, and I can export to Visual Studio. That's new in 2010. In Visual Studio, I can do anything. I can write code and activities. There's actually a library of drag and drop functionality in Visual Studio. I might use no code in Visual Studio. I might just drag and drop more controls in there because there's lots of things in there. Things like listen for a web service call, that kind of stuff. So, and then I can publish from there. So that's new in 2010 is that I can actually go from here to Visual Studio. It used to be I start this way or I start in Visual Studio. Now I can actually start in one and go to the other. So if I run into the wall where they say now I want to do a complex thing, I go into Visual Studio. Okay. I had mentioned that the most important things in my mind for SharePoint Designer is workflows. We just saw workflows and data connections. And there's lots of data connections, but the technology at Microsoft is called BDC. Actually, that's the old way. BDC, Business Data Catalog, read-only. Business Connectivity Services, read-write. So I can hook it up to, go back to SharePoint Designer. So I'm in SharePoint Designer, that's our workflow, but I'm going to switch over to data sources. And up in this corner here, notice it says, well, a couple things I want to point out. One is, here's data sources, and look, it's listing all my lists. Remember our list, that's our data. So these are other lists. So I can use a list as a data source. It's like a DB lookup. Remember I said I can have a choice equal to values found in other databases like in notes. So every single list inside of SharePoint is also a data source. So I can say the list of states or zip codes as a data source, and that could be another list to keep separately. And I can do joins between them too. I can say these three lists I want to define as one data source, and then I can read that data. Down here is document libraries. They're also data source because document libraries really are lists. Look, here's a SOAP service. So I can actually define a SOAP service. By the way, this one's from Lotus Notes, written in Lotus Script. I can have REST services. I can have XML files. So our XML file we used earlier, that's the same data here. So these are all data sources. But up in the corner here, linked data sources, that's where I can do joins, typically between lists. A database, Oracle DB2, it's a relational database. And if you click on that, it's a wizard. It says, hey, where's your database? How do I connect to it? What table do you want? What fields do you want? I'm not going to do that. I must have clicked it. SOAP service, if you have a WSDL file. Now, the only gotcha here is that it must have five methods. It must have read, write, well, create, update, delete. Crud. Well, you're getting to the right. It's create, read. Anyhow, the usual interact with it once. And then you're right, you need this this enumerator, a list of all the key fields essentially, and that, and also the one that gives you the one I hate. It's a method that returns all the data, and it needs that for crawling the data. Right, to crawl it, it needs to go, give me all of them, let me look at that, build my own index, because you can index external data, which is very handy, you know, because I'm going to do searches and things later on, or I'm going to take it offline. But you need a method that returns all the data as a two-dimensional array, and you need one that returns, it's a finder method. There's a list method and a finder method, yeah. If you have a billion records in the data source, does it do the caching? Paging, I don't know, but let's talk a little bit about scale for a second. You might have heard people complain about SharePoint scaling at one point. People in 2007 said, I'm told if I have 10,000 items that I need to do something special because the performance is not good. And in 2007, we used to take all of the data and read it into memory to present the view. In 2010, so if you have lots of data, it took a long time to read it all into memory just to show you one page of it. So in 2010, we changed it so that we only bring in a couple pages. And then as you're scrolling, as you're doing things, it's only bringing in what's needed. So the scale on views is now not a problem, where it was a problem in 2007. We used to say, it was a terrible story, 2007, oh, you got lots of data, no problem. Make a view where all the ones start with A. And a view of all the ones start with B, and a view of all the ones start with C. And that way each one wasn't very big, and then it'd be very performant. But we fixed that in 2010. So now external data sources, scaling, we tell people if you have a million records, you have a NOS database with a million records, that you need to put that data into a relational SQL server and then define an external data connection, external data type for that, so you can take advantage of that scale. Now, as far as a web service doing that call where it has to get the whole list, that might be a challenge. If I'm doing a database connection, it's not a problem. If I'm doing a web service call where I'm saying, give me every piece of data you have, and by the way, give it to me as XML inside of a SOAP message, that's going to be an issue. So I would say if I'm scaling, I'm probably in a relational database anyways. So, or I could use XML. We can talk a bit about that. So, data sources, if I want a new one, I just go up here and click a new one. And for example, the XML file, it says, hey, where's the file? What if I still have it in the, I will tell you that won't work. Because remember the transform? I did, however, create a Azure service. So I have an Azure service where you call my Azure service and you pass it this parameter, and it returns nice XML. So that's what I would do in this case. I'd use my Azure service. Seeing how Microsoft charges my department $90 a month just to have that service. So it would be good if someone uses it. But the point is, you come in here, you define your data sources, whatever it is, and then once they're there, I can use them as if it's local data. And let's take a peek at a cool example. So it's an ugly demo, so you know I wrote it. All of this data here is Lotus Notes data. I'm using XML to bring it in. If I go change, do I have notes running? I don't have notes running. Seven, like I said. I actually got Microsoft to pay IBM for this license. But I haven't gone to 8. It turns out, though, that we're a partner, so I could run it for free. Oh, well. Yeah, because we're a partner. As long as we're not using it in production, we're just using it for training and things, you can. You know who's the number one deployer of Outlook on the planet? IBM Global Services. Just quantity, because everyone goes to them. So I just want to show the database in notes, and then we're going to change the data and see that it changes in SharePoint. Oh, great. It's going to start replicating. Come on. All right, so here's our data. And it looks like I really put a lot of data in this one demo here. So number 16, let's fix that. Clearly it's a typo. So let's shorten it to 49. So we go over here in number 16 with this really big number. I hit refresh. Actually, in the setting, I could say every 60 seconds to do it by yourself, or I can just make manually a refresh. There we go. And number 16 is fixed, 49. So the point is, you know, again, I have a default of 60 seconds refresh under the covers. I don't see it. But when I manually did it like that, it did everything. Because it would have just given me the changes. So, a couple things here. That's all notes data. And this is actually a data view part, a web part I dragged and dropped on my surface. And I said a property of this data view is what data source do I want to use? And I said use the XML one I defined in SharePoint Designer right here. It's using this one right here. Live feed from notes. That's what I call it. So I said, use that one. And it did. And it just put the columns in there and the values. Boom, boom, boom. No code. Just use it. Now, notice that a couple things. One, these are hot links right here. Also, some of these things are red. And if you had really good eye, you might have noticed that there is no total quantity times cost. Is not that column doesn't exist. See, it's not there. So what I've done is I've added a calculated column. Inside this web part, I said, hey, add me a new column, and I want this times this. So I've added value. So I'm not just showing it, I'm adding value. Also, the fact that this is red is because I added a conditional format that said if the reorder level is greater than the quantity on hand, means I need to order more, I'm getting low, turn this red. These are all zero code. These are all point and click. So now I have value added, and lastly, the data up here, this is a filtered list. Right now I'm just seeing Boston, people from Boston. And if I come in here and say, you know, Denver has a problem, let me click on this link. I could have made this link anywhere I wanted, but I left it in the name of it. I'm going to click here. Now notice, ready, go. So this top list, this event of me clicking here is being sent to the page, and now I'm seeing everyone from Denver. This data is SharePoint data. They're linked together with no code. What you do is inside this web part, you say, I want to publish an event. When I click on this, and in this web part, I say, I want you to listen for an event from this web part. It says, and then when it sends that row to me, I told it, use the location to filter this data on. Answer the questions. So you can see this composite, this information could have been DB2, it could have been Oracle, it could have been SAP, it could have been many, many things. Happens to be notes. And I can build this in SharePoint Designer, and I have a video. Basically, the demos I've showed you, I have videos of all of them on YouTube. So you can watch them later on. You don't have to, you know, kind of take notes or anything. So this is one example of composite. And what I haven't finished, actually, if I click here, it's probably an important point. I'm using read-only here. Read-only, which might be good. Read-only, I don't want you to edit my data. However, if I click on this edit, it can launch an InfoPath form. The InfoPath form I launch can call web services, which I have written on the notes side, that edit the data. So I could have put in, you know, I haven't finished it yet, but click there and actually have a form where I can change it. So that means the end user has no idea this data is in notes. He just sees his data, does his job, edits the data, and the fact that some of it's in notes, he doesn't care. And I can move that data from notes to SharePoint later and hardly change anything here. I can just point the data source now to the new list I've created with notes. So it's a way of sort of one step and then the next step. Okay, let's go back to our slides. So BCS is how I would configure that, and I can use that in SharePoint list, InfoPath forms, Outlook forms. I can actually take things, configure BCS offline. So this shows you some of the data sources, some of the screenshots in case we didn't have a network. So we saw first thing this morning, well, yeah, it was this morning. The Domino has a web interface. So I put the server name, the database name, and then I said view open view, and I saw the view. I can use that view inside a iframe or a, I got a picture of it. So here's a web browser looking at Domino functionality, the form, the view, and there's a URL to get to those. I can stick that inside of a page viewer web part. It's a web part, you drag and drop on your surface, and you say, I want you to surface another URL within this real estate. It's a great demo, because it's like 2 minutes. So I can actually show Domino data inside of SharePoint in 2 minutes. I'm not a fan. I mean, it's great because someone wants to see reference information. There it is. But I can't interact with the rest of the page. If I click in there, I want something else to happen. Which it doesn't do. Remember I talked about the example where you get your account number to the calling guy? I want him to enter it in one web part and have all the other web parts look up that information. But you may have information in Domino you just want to put and show up in SharePoint. It's a very quick and easy way of doing it. I actually do that with mail and calendars. And here's my live fake calendar, fake email. The mail is kind of funny because how do you get a mail file with mail in it? Well, it was easy. I just put that email address in lots of places where there was spam being collected. You know, I knew if I put my email address, I'd get spam. So it's just full of spam. There's like 10,000 spam messages in there. So, but there's Joe user password, and you can actually use these URLs yourself and get, you know, see samples on my server. But the problem is, it's like alt tab. I could have another browser window open over here and just alt tab over and see it. But so it's nice to put it in there, but it's not great functionality. Okay, we saw this. So here are the videos. You guys can get these slides when we're done. And these links are all to YouTube videos showing demos. The linked data, it happens in 2 6-minute videos. So one is building the grid, and the second one is linking it to a second web part. Each one is 6 minutes long, kind of give you a feel for that. Oh, this is a funny story. Funny to me. So you're the notes expert at Microsoft. Someone calls you up frantic and says, we have this client. They're a note shop. They're interested in SharePoint. They're very interested in SharePoint. And you're like, and there's a legal department. It's a law office. They just do documents. They want to workflow documents. They work with documents. And the answer is they want SharePoint, but they're a note shop. And I said, great. It works fine. Here you go. You know, use SharePoint. And they're like, no. These people, requirement that they never leave the notes client. They come in the morning, they start notes, and they do everything inside of notes. I thought, well, how do I make that work? Because I'm an idiot. And it took me about 20 minutes of like, well, I can make notes calls into APIs, into SharePoint. I can, and I'm thinking of all these things, and suddenly I realized notes has a built-in browser. So I can email you a link to a SharePoint document. You click on that, the browser opens up, and there's the metadata. It all works exactly the same thing. So that's why it's a funny story. So if you do need to see SharePoint content in Notes, well, hey, it's got a built-in browser, which means if I have a workflow, whether you have a Notes client or an Outlook client, I don't care. The workflow is going to send you an email with all that information. There's going to be a link in there. You click on that link, and you're still in the Notes browser, but now you're in the next thing and doing everything. So anyhow, I'm an idiot. And when I told them the answer, they were like, you're God. Thank you very much. I was like, oh, God, I'm a big idiot. So let's think about how to approach all this. So if you're new to it all, think about these tools. We saw some SharePoint Designer. It's free. You can download it at home. You can download it at work. That's great. A little bit of a gotcha. SharePoint 2010 and SharePoint Designer 2010. The years have to match. I can't use SharePoint Designer 2010 on SharePoint 2007. And I think 2007 is not a free download. So is it? 2007 is? They changed it? Good. So the point is they have to match. But in there, you're going to do data sources, workflows. You can edit pages. That's where you get into HTML kind of things. It's got the ribbon. I can publish it, package it up for publishing to other sites. So you're definitely going to have to learn to use SharePoint Designer. You download Designer today, SharePoint Designer will be your best friend moving forward. InfoPath. InfoPath is where you're going to edit the forms, add data validation, add rules, add buttons to the forms. So you're going to have to learn how to do that. They can also come offline with SharePoint Workspace. Now, Visio, you may or may not need to know about. Maybe just give it to the end user and they draw graphically. They're probably going to have questions, so you're probably going to need to know something about Visio. Right about now, people start complaining, because all these tools I have to learn, it's really hard. And Domino, I just have Domino Designer. This definitely bears mentioning Access Services. Do you have access? Anyone have access databases in your environment? And you admit to it. Good for you. That goes back to the children who have created them, or they're just leftover applications. Microsoft realized that they were in trouble because I had heard a few years ago that Access was the number one platform on the planet for the number of applications. People had created lots and lots and lots of Access applications. People loved it and they hated it. They loved it because they could create an application. They hated it because they didn't scale. Because it would start growing, 10 people using it, and then 20, and now it doesn't scale and there's problems. And people could write really bad apps. Because they're writing simple code, but they're writing some code in those. So what they did is they said, you know, wouldn't it be great if that MDB file with the data in it wasn't on someone's hard drive, but it was up in the server? So Access Service is really just taking that data tables and making them lists. But they look like Access, and I can still take them offline using Access. So essentially, I'm taking a snapshot, or I'm taking this data, and I'm linking it to SharePoint lists, so the data does not live locally. It lives up on the server. So I'm working with a table, and I can do referential integrity, and I can do joins between the tables, and I can do all that stuff like I can do with Access, but I can do it in SharePoint, where it's backup, restore, it's searchable. It's a good option. And again, you can take it offline with Access. Now, I say all that, the UI in the browser sucks, in my humble opinion. This is a shot of one. You know, I can change the background color, but it's not as rich a client because we're limited a little bit on the server. But it's functional. So definitely, if you have an application that's in Access today, a viable option is to recreate it in SharePoint and then move the data up. So we're going to talk about training, and then I'm going to talk about how to attack your thousands and thousands of notes databases. First thing, and this is very intuitive, but no one does it. If you're a notes developer, you know nothing about SharePoint, the first training you should get is how to use SharePoint as an end user, as a power user. Because as you saw, I can do a lot in the browser. You saw me edit a view. I can create a view. I can create a form. I can create all kinds of things in the browser. I can create reports. I create a list from scratch, all from as an end user. So you need to know what end users do so you don't go ahead and code things that are out of the box. So there is user training for SharePoint. It's usually a day long. It's how to navigate, how to do those things. So I recommend that's the first training you get. Then I recommend InfoPath because that's your forms. So you've already learned from the browser how to create my lists and my views and default forms, but now I want to edit the form. And that form, I want to, you know, add validation, add functions in the buttons. And I should mention there, too, another method of integrating my SharePoint application with some other application is in the InfoPath form. So on my form on the screen with InfoPath, the SharePoint data comes down. I might want to push a button and get information from my rich client, from my browser. I can actually make calls off to web services. I can make calls off to other data sources, bring them into the form, and then when I save, I'm writing them back to SharePoint. It's called integration on the glass. So I can do that in my client. I can actually integrate other systems. Now, why is that important? Because if I take this application and I put it into a cloud service, they will not let you use that data connection. I can't use that DB2 data connection. At least at Microsoft, we won't let you currently. And so you say, well, I still need that connection. You can do it on the glass. I can actually have the lookup happening from the browser. So you learn how to do that in InfoPath. So InfoPath training, number two. The third thing you need to learn is SharePoint Designer. SharePoint Designer is your workflows. Your meat and potatoes is your workflow. Also your data connections, your data sources. There's a bunch of other things it does, but those are sort of the main things you need to do. And lastly, somebody in your organization at least should get Visual Studio training. Because when I need to do advanced things, I need to go into Visual Studio. But I definitely discourage people from doing things in Visual Studio unless you have to. Because if I don't use Visual Studio, I can push it to the cloud. I don't worry about the versions. I can move it around. Once I start coding, I'm now a little bit locked into this, you know, this custom code that I have to evaluate every time. All right. Yes. Oh. Yes. With videos too. So that's the point, is that, right, so we aim it at training the power user and then training the developer, but the developer needs to take the power user training first. You know, definitely the case. But yeah, TechNet. It's MSDN though, isn't it? It's in both. Yeah, that's a great way to get started. So let's attack the, actually, is it more videos here? Oh, that was in case that question came up. I want to talk about how to attack. Now, we talked about third-party tools, but what happens when, and this, the record, it's still the record, customers always say to me, you know, I say, how many databases do you have, right? How many? You got, you know, how big is this task? And the record is 200,000. General Motors said they had 200,000 notes applications. A lot of times that number comes from management goes to the notes developers and says, we're thinking about getting rid of your job. So how many databases do you have? Not very many, right? And so the notes people say, oh, I know. I'm going to count everything that ends with .nsf on every server, every replica, mail files, help files, everything, and come back with a really big number so that I get to keep my job. So, and I don't blame those guys. I'm like, hey, sounds good to me. But the truth is, and we mentioned earlier, you don't have that many. You don't have this giant number because there's replicas. There's copies on different servers, so you need to kind of, you know, not figure that in. Now, how do you figure this stuff out without spending 12 years looking at every file and looking, thinking about it? Well, a couple things. One, those third-party tools will do a census on your environment. They call it an analysis. And they have, the Quest one is free. If you go to the Quest Lotus, or it's either the SharePoint Migrator for Lotus or the Lotus SharePoint Migrator. Free download. And they're using the crack cocaine method. It's a free download, and you can run it, and it will crawl your, it's a notes application. It crawls your environment. It looks at all your log files, looks at all your usage, and it crawls around all your servers, and it comes back with a report. And says, here's all the databases I found. It'll say, oh, this contact database, I found 10 replicas of it. But I found, you know, here it is, and there's 10 replicas of it. So that means you're not counting it 10 times. And so it goes, and it'll also say, and by the way, no one has used it in 6 years. It'll actually look at the last, it'll look at data inside there and look for changed data. So it'll actually give you that. So you end up with this really big report, which from the Quest tool, it's free. And I say you should do it because you get this free report, they look smart to your boss. People say, what's your environment look like? I don't know. And it was here before I got here, you know, and it's been growing. So you run this report and you get a nice census. Now, the crack cocaine part is says, oh, I found all these document libraries. Would you like to migrate them to SharePoint? There's like a button because it's a template. and it has a mapping already defined, and you just push a button and it'll just move them. Now pay us money. And you're like, well, I've come all this way. It's right there. And the last I knew, it was $250 per button push to move that database over. They might have changed it or not. But if you don't use that tool, it's okay. It's still just good to have a census of your environment. But that's what they do. Now, I mentioned that Microsoft had a deal with Cassell for their EC Knowledge tool. They do a census of your environment. And then they will, Microsoft has a deal. We can get the software cheap. And they'll do the migrations too. So if it's a template, so think about it this way. If it's a document library or discussion, something in notes, it's defined. We can go into the templates and we can look at all the code. We can see how they work. It's great, which these tool vendors do. And they also know equivalent functionality in SharePoint. For example, I'm going from a notes document library to a SharePoint document library. There's some field name changes, but all this information goes over there. And it'll just, no brainer, just goes. Push the button, it figures it out. But let's say you're going to go from your custom application to something in SharePoint. Now, maybe you're going to go to a template in SharePoint. SharePoint has a bunch of templates, and you might say, oh, I'm going to create a contacts database from this custom one I've created, in which case I need to go in and say first name equals F name, middle name equals, and you have to do a mapping. So these tools will actually look at your database and show you all the fields it found. It'll then, if you pick one of the templates in SharePoint or any list in SharePoint, it'll say, oh, here's the fields there, and it'll show them like that, and you have to say, this one, that one. You do a mapping. You can also do things like, I want to convert this data to a string, or I want to convert this data to rich, whatever. I can do conversions on the fly, too, casting of data. And I can do things like an embedded image in notes. I want to turn to a file, and I want to stick that file into SharePoint. So you have all these options as far as massaging the data while it's moving it over. And that's where I think the $250 is a problem, because I'm going to do it and do it wrong. Then I'm going to do it again and again and again until I get it right. So I don't know if they have a site license or not. But it requires some human intervention to actually go through and define, back and forth what those items will be. But the good news is templates, no brainer. Team rooms, no problem. All the document libraries and discussions and so on, they'll go right over to SharePoint. All right, good luck. And away you go. And you can start showing success to your manager. Say, hey, look, I've moved the easy ones over. So if you start out with tens of thousands, which is pretty common, usually when you run this tool, it'll say these haven't been used in years. It'll have a list of the ones that haven't been used in years. So you can pretty much just get rid of those. Probably. Say, no one's used these in years. We can get rid of it. Usually we can drop it down to about 40% of what you started just by doing that. But then you still say 40% of tens of thousands is still a very, very big number. So you get rid of the ones that haven't been used, and then there's combining. Like, these are all the same database. These are all based on the same custom template I've done. And you can combine those in, and they become one migration task. Now, remember I said you had to map the fields and the data casting? When you do that, you define into the software, this is what I want you to do. I'll do this, and move it here. You can save those instructions. It's called a job. Save this job. Now, the template ones are predefined jobs. If I'm going to go from a document library to document library, I give you a job. But if you save a job, and then you go, oh, this database and notes is almost exactly the same as this other one, I can bring the other job up and tweak it. Bring the other job up and tweak it. So that makes your life kind of a lot easier. And then I showed you the simple ones. And a very important point is going to be complexity. The census tool guesses the complexity. Because you go to a partner and say, I want you to move this notes database. They go, tell me about it. What's it do? How many records? How many forms? How many fields? How many pieces of code? Before I'm going to give you a price. I want you to know that kind of thing. Well, this tool goes through and it tries to figure out complexity. And there's good news and there's bad news with that for all the tools. And that is, the tool, if it looks at it and finds data, a view, and a form, that's a simple one. Data, form, view, great. If it finds data, 57 forms, 17 agents, some JavaScript and like that, it goes, oh my God, complex. And I usually say 1 through 5. I say, this is a 5. Unfortunately, the way Notes works is that if I create a form and then someone comes along and says, I want you to make a change, that I want to update the form, great, I create another one. I copy it. I never delete the old one. I make changes. Oh, I need another update. I copy it. Pretty soon in the database, I'll have 20 forms with only one being used. The tool has no idea. So it'll say, that one's complicated, when it's not. Or maybe you have a JavaScript animated GIF in the corner of the form and a rotating world going around. Cool. The tool will say, oh my God, JavaScript, I don't know what's going on here. This is very complicated. So the point of that story is when the tool runs, it's going to come out and say, these are simple. And the good news is if it says it's simple, it's absolutely simple. It's a piece of cake. Don't worry about it. If it says it's a 1, yay. Those are easy. If it says it's a 5, it means you need to look at it. That means it doesn't know. And someone has to go into the database and try and figure out what it does. So a lot of times people run that tool, and now they have like 10,000, and they'll end up with, you know, a few thousand that are 5 complexity, and they'll have a heart attack. They're like, this is way too much. So if you run the tool, realize that if it says it's complicated, it just means you have to look at it more. So the number gets boiled down, and we've had customers that, I think I mentioned, start with many thousand and end up with the ones that are really complex, really mission critical, really need to be done. The number is usually less than 20 when they boil it all down. I mean, they're throwing things out. They're saying, oh, we don't need this, we don't need that, and we're recreating things. So I always recommend that you start with the simple one that I showed you before. Oh, we got to run a really slick demo. This is a newer demo. And that is, okay, here's our view. This is what you show your boss to wow them. There's only one issue with this view, and that is that it's only one page worth. So I'm just going to add to this view the ampersand count equal minus 1. And now I have all the data. This one's only got 52 records. I have a bigger one. So, but in reality, what do I have in here? I actually have an HTML table. This is an HTML table. I'm going to copy this URL. And start up Excel. Yeah, this is totally cheating. And then here I'm going to say data, get external data from other source, XML import. I lied, cancel. Data from web. Here I put in the URL. I say go. So if I highlight my XML table, HTML table, sorry, and I click import, where do you want to put it? I use a default location. Okay, I've now taken that view and I put it in Excel. And not only have I put it in Excel, I've linked it. See that? I deleted a bunch of stuff. I hit refresh, it goes back out and pulls it in again. This is free reporting. If your boss wants you to do reporting on Notes data, do it this way. Create a template, charts and graphs and everything, and every time they open it up, it goes out, the domino brings in the data, shows charts and graphs, you're a hero. All you have to do is have Office. So that's a nice thing. But we'll go one step further, and that is, I'm going to go to Insert, Table. I'll cancel that. I didn't want to. There. Insert table. See, now it's turning all of that area into a table. But this is going to break my connection back to Domino. So, okay. So there it is. That's a table. And the reason I did that is because I can now export the table to a SharePoint list. Look, I can create a read-only connection between my SharePoint to my SharePoint list, but I'm not going to do that. So, now it will now do a data mapping. Like this is a string, this is a number, and it'll show me what it came up with. I could have skipped that step. So I could have massaged the column formats before I did this. And there's the link to it right there. So we did the same thing we did earlier this morning with access. We didn't really have the opportunity to edit the or cast the data types. And I have found that when I use a lot of data doing this way, it seems to skip some data. So that's why I don't show this one first, even though it's the sexier of the demo. So if you're not a lot of data, this seems to work fine, but I would count the number of rows you started with and the ones you ended with. Right, or OLE objects, yeah. Or attachments, or we have OLE objects and attachments, both of the rich text. Right. Okay, there's both. It notes there's attachments. So it's like a mail attachment for your email, and there's embedded, which means it's actually embedded. Okay. Yep. You have the option. The Quest tool will actually create you an InfoPath form that looks like the notes form. And if you have an embedded OLE object, it'll be in the InfoPath form embedded object. If you have an embedded picture, you know, like a picture of something, you have the option of saying, you know, having this embedded is less useful than having it converted to a file. And then put a link there to the file. So you have less options. In the it'll ask you in the migration tool, how do you want to deal with embedded content? And you can say, I want you to put it into a file. And then put a link to it inside the document. Or I can leave it embedded. So yes, we definitely deal with embedded things. I know it sounds hard, but... well, if I have one to show you. Well, we go to my site. All right, so this is a document library here. So if you click on, this will actually launch the document. Well, so if it's a document library, it's going to actually attach, this is like attached here, and then all the metadata will go over to the form. If you're going to a custom list, which it sounds like you might be, custom list, yes. Oh, yeah, that works. That yes, the rich text. Oh, I see. Right. 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 I mean, that's very common. That's a very common thing. That's why I'm trying to think of different ways of solving it. Because, so you're saying the problem is when I rip this document out and put it someplace, I lose the URL. Right. Right. I'm pretty sure that the migration tool has the option of, yes, taking that attachment or document and putting it into a library, but then replacing it with a link. So that now when you're looking at it, instead of seeing an icon, you see a live link and you click on that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how they deal with it. It's optional. I mean, you can say, how do I want to deal with those? And one of them, I think, is to put them in a central place and just wherever I take it out, stick in that link. But yeah, to move it someplace else usually, because this is the way SharePoint works. It's better to have the files, you know, not in the middle of the, you know. If I have InfoPath, let me go to InfoPath. Oh, I don't have it there. Oh. But yeah, that's how that works. There's a bit of an issue where you have multiple attachments. It's possible in Lotus Notes to have multiple attachments with the same name. You know, it can be my Word document, my Word document, my Word document. They're all different. So that was a bit of a challenge. I remember when that came up. I was like, oh, how do you handle that? You know, so you have to add to the names, you know, 1, 2, 3, and so on. I've covered all the things I thought was critical, so I'm hoping we have a little question time, seeing how we have 20 minutes. That was a good, very good question. Yeah, please. Well, they renamed themselves to Harmony. Yeah, yeah, Harmony. No, they're fine. Matter of fact, I yell at the Microsoft people because the nice thing about it is I can just drag and drop, you know, documents over in the Harmony, and they go into SharePoint. So it's fine. I know that company. It's a very small company. And we don't even do that in Outlook. You know, wouldn't it be better in Outlook if I got an attachment, I could just drag it over, but now I have to actually click and do a step. I have to, you know, instead of just dragging it. So, no, I think it's fine. I think it's a good way of, especially if you're in a mixed environment, you know, some of your end users are Node, some of them are in Outlook and Exchange, because you want to get content out of the mail file. You want it out of the mail file into a central store, and then you just want to mail links around. So if in Notes, I get this document, I drag it into Exchange, you know, from using the Harmony, and then I copy the link and I mail the link. That's a very good approach, because you just want stuff out of the mail file, because it's terrible if it's in mail files. So yeah, a lot of people use it. It's very popular. So do I recommend it? I haven't used it, but I also can say it's lots of people are using it, and it seems to be popular. They're the only one. That's probably why they're very popular. I don't know of anybody else who has that integration tool. Wait, no. Within the Notes client, you fire it up, and then you can drag documents and over to it, and they automatically go up to SharePoint.
Whatever you drop on the symbol, and you say
The technology is very easy. It's calling web service APIs and writing the document up. So oh, nice. Now, there is another company. They're in Vancouver, and I'll think of their name in a second, and they do integration tools between Lotus Notes and SharePoint. They're a good company, and I'll think of their name in a second because I work with them a lot. So Harmony's got that drag. It's a competitor of theirs. So, it's good to have competitors who have pricing and features kind of thing. But the Vancouver company... Darn. Well, you can always email these guys and I'll get it back to you, but they do some conversions too. They'll migrate. I believe they have the take a notes document, it'll migrate the notes document over to SharePoint. Like the content, not just the attachment but the actual document. Sort of an on demand, migrate yourself. Because maybe in your notes database you might only have 10 ones they care about. So that injures you themselves. What is that company? It's going to drive me crazy now because I work with them a lot. Yeah, it's true. I'll blame it on the jet lag. So, but. To migrate, what kind of databases? Oh, Quikr. Yes. Yeah, I know the Quest people have Quikr. I'm pretty sure Cassell, I think they all do. They did that later because Quikr is a newer feature. But yeah, they do Quikr. Now there's two versions of Quikr, right? There's the Domino version and there's this. And which one do you have? That one's easier. Exactly. Yep. And the point is because it's a template, now it's a no-brain. You just tell it to move it to a team site in SharePoint. Yep, we did actually went through the tools early. I did show that one. I did want to mention about AvPoint. That's one of the tools is AvPoint, and they don't do the census tool. It's a company, AvPoint, that does archiving. That's their main business, right? I'll take your mail files and I'll archive them. And what they do is they archive them in their own format, AvPoint's format, condense them. And they were able to... They can do it for Lotus Notes archiving, and they can do Outlook archiving. And because they store it in a neutral format, they can actually back it up as Lotus Notes and restore it as Outlook. And when they discovered that, they said, oh, we have a new business. And so now they have a tool that will actually take your notes documents and push them into SharePoint. So that they've been around maybe 2 years doing that. I mean, it's an old company, but they've been doing this migration that way, but it just moves documents. And I know that Quest does the convert your notes forms into InfoPath forms. It takes it because basically notes forms are stored as well can be stored as XML, so it does an XML DXL extract, and then it creates them in InfoPath, which is XML also. So they look pretty good, and if you look at their website, they actually show you before and after. Like here's the notes form, it's complex, and here's the InfoPath form. The tool ran, and it just moves things a little bit, formatting, but everything's there. It's really good. I have no idea what it costs. That's the only thing. So we have like 15 minutes left. I know if we leave early, it would be a sin, wouldn't it? It would be fine with me. I just hope you get a feel for it's easy to do the easy ones. And the complexity can really make it difficult, but I want you to think that most of what you have is either easy or moderately difficult, and you usually don't have very many of the very complex ones. And customers say, it's very complex, I'm going to buy an SAP module or off the shelf, or I'm going to use some other software, because it's mission critical, complex, and it would take us a long time to move it. My goal is to move notes developers. If a developer and notes, who understands the application and how it works, can start moving data and then redoing logic in SharePoint. When the smoke clears, when you're all done, you've moved your databases, but you've also have notes developers who are now SharePoint developers. And that's better because they understand the business. They're the people that have been there a long time. So that's a lot better than me coming to you and saying, call Microsoft Services, we'll spend 2 months with you and then say 7 million euro or something like that. And believe me, that happens because the Microsoft Services go, we don't know that much about the notes application, so we'll just bid a really high number, you know. And then management gets scared and they don't do anything for 2 more years. You know, so I like to see internal people starting to do things, get some success, get people using SharePoint. You know, once their application is in SharePoint, they have URLs, once they start moving their My documents up to their My sites, and they can, you know, backup, restore, share links, then the momentum gets going. Just like Lotus Notes momentum, you know. Once there was useful things, it just really takes off. So that's my goal, because then when Microsoft comes back to you in 3 years and says, hey, we need, you know, a new version or upgrade your software, then you won't say, well, we didn't even use it. That's my fear. So when you say, well, we bought it, but we didn't deploy it and use it. So you need to get people using it. And there's a lot of value. You know, I'm a very big fan of SharePoint. And the first version was not so great, and the second version was better, but the third version at Microsoft is always a good version. So, yeah, so 2010 is much nicer. You know, it's when a good time to sort of start doing SharePoint. Avoid the most pain. Yes. So the comment is, yes, there's a, I forgot what they call it, but you have to configure SharePoint to point to a Domino directory where the NSF files are that you care about. You have to tell it which ones. You say, these are the NSF files I want you to index. And then it will index those. It crawl, it, you know, I don't know when it runs every so often, but it goes through all the notes databases, crawls them, and builds an index. And then we do a search. So yes, you can add notes databases, just like you can add Oracle databases and other content types, but notes is one of them that you can add to the search. We've had some problems. I know people have been complaining about setting it up and configuring it. It's definitely a feature of the product. Like it says, this is what we do. The question is support. And it's always someone have trouble setting it up, you know, configuring it. Once it's configured, it works fine. So I've heard people complaining about getting it set up. So, but it's definitely a feature, which means you can yell at Microsoft and say, hey, it says right here that this works. You know, come and help us make it work. So, well, there's 10 minutes left, and if you have a question you're too embarrassed to ask, I'll hang out a little bit. But let's declare victory and just say that we covered a lot of content. You know, it's a Friday. It's the afternoon. Just, you know, think about things. And basically, I want you to get started. You know, you need to go to your office on Monday or whenever the holidays are over and actually find a database view and pull it in and bring it into SharePoint just to learn about SharePoint. Even if you throw it all away, just so you can learn. You know, edit the form and look at TechNet and look for those training videos. There's a video. The guy's talking. Here's how you do this and that. And then there's a Hyper-V environment online. You can actually do it yourself. But I'm hoping you have SharePoint in your environment. Does someone have access for it? The free version. No. You haven't? Not installed. Well, yell at them. Well, you can use the virtual environment to learn, but yell at your management. Say, look, if I'm going to be migrating these things, I need to start learning. I need to get access to it. So, great. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, and enjoy your weekend.